All right, this is Pure Decking Show number 466 for Thursday, February the 10th, 1996. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and spending way too much money on retro computer gear because it makes me feel like I'm not old. And yes, the coin drop was new. I had to set up a new soundboard, and this one came with a bunch of default ones, and that was one that was in there. So it's like, ooh. There's some other good ones in there, too, so might break them out a little bit from here and there. But anyways, right, intro, where the hell was I? Tonight, we have a madman. What is up, madman?
I've got to stop typing things into Google.
Is it calling you a computer?
No, but I got answers to questions I should never have asked.
And we have an RU. What's up, RU?
Not much, man. Yourself? How's your week been?
Busy. Crazy work shit. Death by process, man. Death by process. It's like, seriously, it's taking months to even start on something that I could have... something I could have done in a week if I was just allowed to go press the buttons. It's like, oh my God. Keep getting asked, can you make a new diagram for this? What's wrong with the old one? Or the third one I made? It's like, well, we have questions. What are those questions? Well, make a new diagram and we'll tell you. It's a stall game. It's, you know, they know it's going to take some time to make a new diagram. They don't have anything. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with the old one, but they're just stalling. Because they don't want to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep. Know that feeling.
Start escalating shit up the chain. And finally, it's like, would you just give me admin to the system? I'll do it my fucking self. And I did. Today, basically. It's like, yeah. Okay, you need this filled out. Fine. Give me admin. I'll go put it in myself. Because I'm tired of waiting on you guys to do it. So, that's basically what ended up happening.
Hell of a week.
And then I keep getting messages about it. It's like, well, what scrum team is this a part of? Well, if you read what I put in the damned thing, that's the worst, is they're asking me all the questions about the shit I put in there. It's like, I'm sorry, I didn't know that, you know, literacy was no longer a requirement for having a job.
Well, it's not in California anymore for high schools.
What?
They took out grading. Some universities as well.
Well, that's messed up.
It's racist, yeah. Morps.
Grading is racist.
Yes.
I'm confused.
You should be.
We'll show you on the doll after the show.
Okay. I fully admit I don't understand anymore. I'm lost.
No, I've lost it too, man.
It's just... Anyways. So, let's get into it. This first one's a little different, but I thought it was might be fun to kind of talk about. So, this one is from NBC News. And basically, the article is talking about how... cars with less fancy stuff in them are better. I think they're trying to justify the chip shortage.
You want to hear me arguing?
Well, I mean, that's why I thought you might be an interesting conversation. So mainstream auto brands like Toyota, Ford, Chevrolet, and Honda are causing drivers fewer problems than luxury cars, largely because they have less technology, a newly released study has shown. The J.D. Power study, which surveyed 29,487 original owners of 2019 model year vehicles after 3 years of ownership from July to November, 29,487... Really? You couldn't find a round number? It's like, what, did you send out 30 and that's how many, 30,000 and that's how many responses you got?
No, possibly. They probably sent out 40,000 and that's how many responses they got.
Still.
And I bet you if you did a survey of who actually responded between men and women, wouldn't have balanced out at 50-50.
Probably. Found
therefore, the study is has no equity to it. We need to throw it away.
Oh, for God's sake. Yeah, so owners of 2019 model year vehicles after 3 years of ownership from July to November found that infotainment systems alone were the single biggest problems reported by source of problems reported by owners. Quote, many owners are holding onto their vehicles longer, unquote. David Amodo? We'll say Amodo. A director of global automotive at J.D. Power said, quote, long-term dependability is even more critical, unquote. Well, yeah, have you tried to buy a car lately? Holy shit. It's insane. It's like, yeah, sure, you pay for it now, you'll get your car in a year. It's like, what?
If lucky.
Well, that's the thing, is they want you to start making the payments right away. It's like, yeah, you won't get the car until we can deliver it, but you owe us the money now. It's like, but I haven't taken delivery of the product. Why would I start paying for it now?
And I also don't want to pay interest on this.
Really? The study showed that the gap between the best and worst brands is significant, according to Amodo. Kia owners reported an average of 145 problems every 100 vehicles surveyed included in the survey. In power speak, that is 145 PP100. Okay, why include? Oh, because they're showing their formula. By comparison, bottom-ranked Land Rover had nearly twice the reported complaints at 284 PP100. The industry average for vehicles covered in the 2022 vehicle dependability study was 192 problems per 100. What was also surprising was that mainstream brands such as Kia, Toyota, and Chevrolet outscored luxury marquee like Lexus, Cadillac, and Mercedes-Benz by an average of 190 versus 204. Now, that's interesting to me that Kia had less problems because my experience with those cars has not been good. I mean, yeah, they work, but bullshit.
They're just a base. They're a baseline car. That's it, man.
That's one reason like, they're probably doing better.
They're not less stuff to break.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I owned a Hyundai as my first car. It was reliable as shit. Like, and we beat the fuck out of that car.
Well, I had this little Pontiac for nearly a decade that I had bought new, ran it into the ground. That was a great car.
Yeah.
And I haven't had, I mean, I hardly had to do a damn thing to it to keep it running. It actually had a Toyota engine in it. So, anyways.
From the NUMMI plant in California.
Yeah, you know the car I'm talking about. Yeah. Because they were doing this, because it was the same thing as a Toyota Matrix. Yeah, the Vibe. Yeah, that's it, rats. I had a Pontiac Vibe for nearly a decade. Ultimately sold it because... why did I sell that car?
The Chevy Nova and the Toyota Corolla are also the same car.
Yeah, it's the same thing as a Toyota Matrix. I'm trying to remember why the hell I sold that car now. I think I just got the bug for a new Shiny. I kind of regret that because that car lasted, and of course they don't make them anymore. Let's see. There appears to be one key reason, the amount of digital technology in use. Quote, some automakers are performing much better than others at preventing problems from occurring, unquote, Amodo said. These problems include the vehicle's mechanicals, exterior and interior, but also infotainment systems, driver assistance systems, and all the other electronic systems in today's vehicles. Stuart Shore, VP of Communications with Jaguar Land Rover, said in a statement that, quote, in the last year, we've started rolling out a new infotainment platform with simplified screen menus, hands-free operation, and pairing with phones, unquote. No. Okay. Guys, both iPhone and Android do this thing now where you hook your phone into it, and it gives you a simplified version of your phone. If you want to do a fancy infotainment for people to pair their phones to, just do that. You don't need to build your own based on BlackBerry and... you know, weird-ass menu systems and whatever the hell. And then if somebody doesn't want to pair their phone to it, cool. Give them a radio and a CD player. Or, I don't know, tape deck. Hell, that'd probably work better than a CD player, truth be told.
I mean, you don't even need the CD player anymore, just a USB port.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, just an MP3 player. There you go.
Just speakers, yeah. That way you can plug your MP3 player into it.
Give me my CD player. I have a Luddite.
An AM, FM band radio. That's it.
I've got one on the radio next, so. Cars with CD play. Oxen, yes, Oxen.
Yeah.
So, let's see. Anyways, you ever look at how those tape converters work? Rats mentioned because, you know, he's mad that most cars don't have a tape deck anymore, so you can't use them. They're just a tape head that butts up against the other tape head. I mean, it's fascinating that that works as well as it does.
Yeah.
So, anyways, let's see. For the initial review, the Prob Mac area was by far with infotainment. And last year, we started rolling out a new infotainment platform with simple... Okay, I already read that. One of the other significant findings of the study was that Japanese automakers, to a large degree, have lost the quality and reliability lead they long enjoyed. While Toyota ranked number 5th in the power study and the luxury brand Lexus ranked number 6, many familiar Japanese names, including Honda and Nissan, were rated as below average. Korean brands Kia, Hyundai, and Genesis, long perceived to have lasting quality, captured 3 of the top 4 spots. General Motors, which also struggled over the years with a reputation for poor quality, was another leader in the study, led by its Buick brand in the number 2 spot. Well, who was number 1? They didn't say. 3 of the top 4. So, yeah, it was Kia, Hyundai, Genesis, and General Motors. So Kia must have been number 1 then, because they talked about that at the beginning of the article.
Damn.
I'm surprised. while owners reported experiencing traditional mechanical issues such as faulty engines, transmissions, they're far less common than even a decade ago. Today, it's digital technology that has a higher propensity to fail. Infotainment systems were the single biggest source of owner complaints, according to the study, up an average of 51.9 problems for every 100 vehicles. Built-in voice recognition systems were the single top concern in the study, although issues with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, as well as Bluetooth connectivity, also created large numbers of complaints. That poses a conundrum for automakers. They know consumers are demanding more high-tech features and might go somewhere else to get the latest infotainment and safety systems. The challenge is how to prevent those issues. Going forward, manufacturers are looking at a solution like the use of smartphone-style over-the-air updates. Amadello noted, no, please, not in the car. While that won't prevent problems, it'll give an automaker a way to send a fix out without forcing customers back to dealerships. But no, just... The Ford I have now, the Sync, you can download the updates onto a flash drive, plug them in the little port under the armrest, and update it that way. You don't have to take it to the dealer just to do an update. The problem is they never put out updates for the damn thing that fix anything. They put out like 2. That was it. it may not even discover there's a problem in the first place, is what they're saying. So, actually, I kind of feel like with the infotainment systems, they probably just shouldn't include them. Just flat out. You know, you buy the car, and if you want a fancy high-end stereo, go take it to a stereo shop. If you want one of these high-end touchscreens, cool, you can get that. But, you know, just have a standard socket, because that's what they all used to have, you know, standard head unit slot. You know, make it bigger for info systems, but, you know, that, and just don't tie it into the main functions of the car. Because that's the other thing, is I was mentioning that Ford I have. The Sync in it is okay, but it sucks. I mean, really. It Bluetooths my phone, and it'll play stuff, and it's okay, right? I mean, it does what I want, but it's... I've had issues with it. Sure, it's kind of crummy. But I can't get it out of the car, because it runs a bunch of stuff. So if I wanted to put a better sound system in the car... That old head unit is going to have to get strapped in somewhere, like, you know, probably in the rear of the car somewhere.
They probably stick it in the trunk.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't really have a trunk. It's a hatchback, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's a design flaw. Running anything to do with the engine through that head unit is a design flaw.
Actually, it's usually the AC, but still. Yeah, I mean, it does manage a bunch of stuff on the ODBC. So it's just like, or it's not ODBC. What is it the car uses? The network in the car. I'm blanking on the name of it now.
Oh, if it's...
CAN bus.
I know the AC. Check to see if there's an adapter out yet. A lot of times there's eventually an aftermarket. I had to get an aftermarket adapter for my car when I switched out the infotainment system.
There is. It's just expensive. Basically, if I wanted to put a nice high-end head unit in that car, it's going to cost me probably $2,000 between the head unit and the adapter. And it's like, the car is like 8 years old. It's not worth fucking with
and
at this point.
You're going to be getting two wiring harnesses as well, because you're going to want all the buttons on the steering wheel to still work.
Yep. No, I was thinking CAN bus. The ODBC is doing your diagnostics. So, rats, I screwed up. I should have said CAN bus. But I'm not really a car guy, so, you know, cut me a little slack there. We have RU for the car stuff. He actually knows what the hell he's on about.
only one model, dude. That's about it.
This is the one I worked on.
And it's a 1% vehicle, dude. You know, like, I know how the moving parts work on all other vehicles, so I've got a rough idea. But, I went all autistic mode, man. One make, one model. But, most of it transfers over apart from the engine. But all the rest of the parts pretty much the same. Still got four wheels, engine, gearbox, clutch.
If you're not watching the IRC, Rat says his dream old man car is the 1GB Eagle Talon.
Yeah, American vehicle. I don't know what.
So.
Barracuda Roadrunner.
Oh, I hope you've got a spare 2.5 mil.
Oh, but it was the fastest production car every year it was made. It looks awesome, and I would murder myself in it.
Madman, in a straight line. In a straight line. And, I mean, if Japan wanted to conquer the car market again, go back to making 1990s cars, man. Go back to that shape. Bring back the Skyline. Bring back 1Vs and 180SXs and 200SX.
You know, I'll bet if you did a line of retro futuristic cars, they would that 80s design, they would sell mad.
It would be the first time ever you see car sales just rocket, man. Cuz every dude who grew up in the 90s, like my era, who's got the disposable funds, and let's face it, a lot of them do now, they will buy that shit, man. They are so into collectibles.
Oh.
And if you could get a brand new, say, 34 Skyline with all the same running gear and everything. But it just came off the factory floor with 0Ks on the clock. Name your price.
You just reminded me of something they said at work today, and I can't say it on the show, so we'll talk about it after the show. It's just like, damn.
If you wanted to be a CEO of a car manufacturer and you wanted to, you know, pretty much sell cars again, I mean, hand over fist sell cars, start making the old shit again.
Well, the thing is, you've got to get it lined up almost Model T style so you can churn them out and make them cheap.
This would not be your first car.
Oh, you're talking, okay, I got you.
I'm talking like, so dude's got a job like you, Morbs. In the decent figures, money, plenty of disposable cash, no kids, no wife, 34 Skyline, $100,000, fuck it, buying it. You know, they would. I'm telling you right now, because second hand or third hand, even fourth hand, fifth hand, 34 Skyline running $100,000 in this country.
Well, I tell you,
they still sell.
You know, that's not the first time I've had somebody profile me like that and say, oh, you should be buying this, but they were trying to get me to buy a Tesla. And I'm really glad I didn't, because they've been having nothing but problems with those things lately.
Dude, don't buy a Tesla. Stay away from electric cars. I'm telling you right now, it is – electric cars are nothing but a transition. They're not long-term.
They don't have the infrastructure to support it.
A, there's no infrastructure. B, the batteries don't last long enough. C – outside rains, has dust, has everything you don't want in electronics.
Yeah.
Look, to be honest, I don't want to even ride in one, because I'm sitting on a bomb. I'm literally sitting on those batteries, and yeah, I don't trust it. I really don't. But I really think electric cars are transitional.
Think you might go hydrogen fuel cell?
I could be totally wrong. But I think solar panels and windmill farms too are transitional.
Think we're going to go nuclear when we finally get our heads out of our asses.
Well, I agree with you there. And I think the electric motors they're developing for them now are probably going to be the part that drives the vehicle, but it's not going to be a battery.
Are you going to get hub-driven individual wheels motors like they do for the military?
That's an interesting thought. With ECMs?
Yeah, it's a little more expensive in the beginning, but when you have such major problems like electronic cars do have, you're only replacing one part instead of the whole fucking thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I mean, like the hybrid, no one's making hybrid cars anymore, are they? But hybrid was the newest, greatest thing that was going to, revolutionize. No one wants a hybrid. And I'm telling you, only 5% of the population want Tesla. It's my prediction that they're transitory. And just they don't have the longevity, man. And there's nothing beautiful about them in any way that would make them collectible at all.
So Rats wants you to look into something called the Nissan Heritage Program.
Okay. I'll have a quick look at that.
Apparently they're restarting production for some parts that
That's been the greatest thing with Nissan and Mazda and Mitsubishi and all those Asian Japanese cars is that aftermarket parts for anything, even going back to the 70s, is still relatively easy to get. In my country anyway, because I'm closer to Asia, with a company called Rare Spares. And then there are other companies just flat out making them brand new. But I've never had a problem modifying Nissans and stuff like that.
They're making new replacement parts for the R32-34.
Yeah, well, they're still very sought-after cars. Everybody wants them.
Yeah.
Because they're reliable, they're faster than a Ferrari, faster than a Lamborghini, and may not make the ladies wet, but makes all the boys hard.
Fair enough.
Seriously, dude, you rock up in a Supra 34 Skyline heads turn, people want to look at it. Because, hey, yeah, they know what that car is, but there are a million parts you can mix and match on that car to turn it into a complete custom fucking unit. Like, it says so much about the individual and the driver, like what sort of coilovers they're running, what camber they're running. They have the hikers engaged, at what degree. You know, there's so much you can do with those cars. And it's all turnkey. Like, as long as you've got a 10mm spanner, you can work on it yourself.
Well, I understand those tend to disappear out of garages like nobody's business, but
they do. That would be why, because it's still a very sought-after model of car. And I think Nissan have seen, the aftermarket parts going through the roof, so they want in on it. Why buy an aftermarket? Buy a genuine.
So, continuing the car talk. Oh, yeah, 10mm sockets. You're right, Rats. Those are the ones that always disappear. Continuing the car talk, this next one's from Ars Technica. Radio station Snafu in Seattle bricks some Mazda infotainment systems.
What?
Yep.
Listening to a radio station will brick my infotainment system.
So, I guess you haven't seen the modern digital stations. So, a lot of them digital stations, if you have the right receiver, will send album art, title information, station name, basically CD text.
Yeah, I've seen the song name, length, the title information popping up. But
yeah. They can send images too over this. So Some Mazda owners in Seattle area are stuck with bricked infotainment systems after listening to a particular radio station. According to the Seattle Times, the problem began on January 30th, and the afflicted Mazdas from model years 2014 to 2017, when the cars tuned into the local NPR station, KUOW 94.9. At some point during the day's broadcast, a signal from KUOW caused the Mazda's infotainment systems to crash. The screens died and the radios were stuck on the radio station. From there, the infotainment systems became trapped in a rebooting loop, never successfully completing the task. When afflicted owners took their cars to be checked at the local Mazda dealers, they were told that the connectivity master unit was dead and needed to be replaced. The snag? A new CMU costs $1,500 if you can find one, which you can't because of the supply chain shit. They say problems in the article, but, you know. The problem, according to Mazda, was that the radio station sent out image files in its HD radio stream that did not have extensions. And it seems that the Mazda infotainment system of that generation needs an extension and not a header to tell what a file is. No extension, no idea, and the system gets corrupted. The Seattle Times contacted KUOW and Xperi, a technology company responsible for the HD radio technology, which told the paper that the company was aware of the issue. Mazda told Ars that it has distributed service alerts to dealers advising them about the problem. Although the replacement MCUs are currently delayed, they should be replaced free of charge. Quote, these customers should contact their local Mazda dealer, who can then submit a goodwill request to the Mazda warranty department on their behalf, order the parts, and schedule a free repair when the parts arrive. So Mazda's saying they're going to cover this, but...
Yeah, they will.
Damn. Wrong radio. I mean, think about that, though. What Mazda is this on? The article does not say, I'm afraid. Just says some Mazda owners with a model year. It does not say what models. But it kind of makes you wonder, what else could you do to these infotainment systems over a radio signal for HD radio? I mean, granted, you need to be able to broadcast it, right? But, you know, it's like, okay, how hard is it to set up a radio broadcast and send out the right things? Probably not that hard. You probably a couple $100 for an SDR and getting the formats right. But after that, if you're just attaching files and it doesn't know what to do with them without an extension in a Mazda, I mean, I just wonder how many of these head units you could... I don't know, sent commands to it, or, you know, script in the image, or just the image is not an image, it's something else, an executable or something. I'm just wondering, you know, what else could you do to one of these guys? You know, could you swap out the infotainment system with, like, you know, some of the pictures from the Hackers movie that they made pop up on the screens and just, you know... Yeah, you fuck with people while they're driving. Of course, that probably causes a wreck, so that's probably a bad idea.
And you know they didn't think of any security on this.
Of course not. That's what I'm wondering about.
No one was thinking we're gonna hack the radio on your car effectively.
Well, I mean, a lot of these radios, like we were talking about earlier, are tied into the CAN bus. So if you can get code execution on these things, what else can you do?
That's crazy. And Heratz, those heritage parts, oh my God, are they expensive? I think I'll stick with aftermarket. Wait. I'm like $7,500 just for the head of a fucking, for a 34 Skyline.
Yeah, that's not a daily driver. That's a hobby.
Oh, no, that's the best part of those cars, Morps. Like, it's a race car, and it's a daily driver, dude. Like, my Rotary was not a daily driver. That was a pure race car. But my 180SX, that was a race car and a daily driver. They're just that reliable, man.
So Rat says there was a DEF CON talk where they... got into a Dodge Viper through the XM radio. Apparently, they were controlling some of they were sending some commands to the throttle.
Wow. Either way, if there's hacking on cars, you'll hear it on Pure Decking. Sure, I'll be looking for it.
And that's why the radio doesn't need to talk to shit in your fucking car.
Yeah.
Well, I think our idea of speakers with an aux port is probably the way to go at this point.
So in the future, should not be tied into the engine at all.
So in the future, instead of these gearheads and shit having like Pennzoil written on the windscreen of their car, they're going to have like McCafferty's or something protected.
Oh, for God's sake. Yep, got to install that antivirus on your car's entertainment system.
When antivirus should run, bro, on your race car. But, yeah, we're getting closer to the anime world, you know, of hacking cars as we're driving.
Just flat out Ghost in the Shell. Drive it from your implant.
I'm still loving that. His car is not connected to the internet. What an idiot. He's driving that himself.
Was that iRobot?
No, that was in Ghost in the Shell.
There was also a scene in iRobot. You're driving manually?
Yeah. It's going to be a sad day when people freak out at people driving manually. Then again, I think if they do perfect it, they'll take manual driving away from us all day altogether.
Oh, yeah. They'd much rather. What? No, I doubt that, actually. Because if they take manual driving away from people, the amount of revenue local and state governments will lose due to traffic infractions will...
Well, see, this is going to be an interesting fight with the local municipalities wanting cash against Mothers for Safety and automobiles and shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's an interesting fight. Like, what happens to Mothers Against Drink Drivers when it's completely automated? Do they just fall apart?
Well, I'm thinking if you take it to the point where it's literally a driverless car, they just won't sell it to you. Instead, it'll be a you'll own nothing and like it, and Uber will own the cars, and you'll have to use an app on your phone to summon a vehicle when you want to go somewhere, and you don't get to keep it.
Yeah, and all cars will turn into the New York subway system. They'll hop in. There'll just be a big shit on the seats.
Well, it probably depends
no one's
on where
gonna
you live,
care.
But
it's not
yeah.
their car. Yeah, I hate where we're going at the moment.
You'll be able to buy it, and manual driving will be an option, but it will turn into the how many people can drive a stick shift. It'll still be there for everyone who learned.
Oh, no.
It's just people will stop learning.
Madman, it won't be an option. It'll be a subscription.
Oh, yeah. Hey, you want to drive yourself? $39.95. You get that thrill, self.
And they'll say, oh, no, that subscription cost is covering your driver's insurance and the court fees and potential traffic infractions because you're driving manually like a madman. You know, it's like. Rat said, it's not a shit, it's interior decorating.
Rats, are you sure you don't work for CNN?
Don't worry, we're going to convert it into biodiesel. They're just refilling your car early.
Yeah, that was a good one, Rats.
Okay, so next one up is from Bloomberg. We're fine without Facebook, German and French ministers say. This is because Facebook threatened to pull out of some EU countries because they weren't getting the what they wanted.
Later, they said, faggot, okay. Don't let the door hit you.
Yep.
Yeah, that I would too, man. If Zuck made the threat, later, faggot, it's get the fuck out. Don't come back.
Yep.
Take all your subsidiaries with you.
Meta Platforms Inc. Veiled threat to quit Europe because of blocked talks over privacy rules was more like music to the ears of two top German and French politicians. Quote, after being hacked, I've lived without Facebook and Twitter for 4 years and life has been fantastic. Unquote. German economy minister Robert Habeck told reporters at an event alongside French finance minister Bruno Le Maire in Paris on Monday. Quote, I can confirm that life is very good without Facebook and that we could live very well without Facebook, unquote. Lamar added, Quote, digital giants must understand that the European continent will resist and affirm its sovereignty. Wait, sovereignty? Where did that escalated quickly.
They're pretending they're a country. Isn't it cute?
The pair were responding to comments in Meta's annual report published Thursday, warning that if it couldn't rely on new or existing agreements to shift data, then it would, quote, likely be unable to offer a number of our most significant products and services, including Facebook and Instagram, in Europe, unquote. The European Union, quote, is such a big internal market with so much economic power that if we act in unity, we won't be intimidated by something like this, unquote, Habeck said. Meanwhile, Lamar listed the ways in which European governments have challenged tech giants, including privacy rules, taxation, and blocking the development of digital currencies. So I just find it hilarious that they're just like, yeah, see ya. Bye, Felicia. So
yeah, done.
Of course, you know how that negotiation is going to go. They're going to slink back into the room. It's going to be, oh, hey, Mark.
Yeah. Dude, I don't care. I'd like to see it all fuck off. Or at least the media to stop paying attention to social fucking media.
Go ahead, Madman.
I was going to say, do you think any of the concessions Europe gets out of social media will flow to any other blocks, or is it just they'll have Facebook Europe, Facebook US, and Facebook China?
Well, what Facebook is pissed about is Europe has said that them shipping data offshore is violation of GDPR. And Facebook is saying, but we had agreements saying we were allowed to do that. And because Facebook obviously is aggregating their data and shipping it around in their internal backends, so they don't want to have to build out separate infrastructure for the EU, because that's basically what the EU is requiring. And I get why, you know, from just a practicality, why Facebook doesn't want to deal with that, but I kind of get why the EU is saying it too. They want to keep their data within their jurisdiction so they can actually, you know, enforce their laws. So go ahead.
Just walk up to Zuck and go, look, this is the new deal. Pray I don't alter it further. Like, just get hardcore with them. We know you've got the money to build the infrastructure. We know you've got the skills. You want to stay in Europe? You'll do this. If not, fuck off. Very short conversation. That's all that has to be had.
Well, I agree with what Rat's putting there. See, he says he thinks Facebook's going to fizzle out in Europe anyways, and then, you know, some competitor that actually respects the local laws will, you know, show up, take over.
Well, we were talking about that before the show, that Facebook's sort of fallen off. Yeah, you could be right.
Well, I think that's why they created this Meta Inc. and they're trying to shift into other areas, is they're hunting for a market to get into, because I think that they're seeing that, you know, it's not that Facebook is going away anytime soon, but between Facebook and Instagram and their ads, yeah, sure, it's a cozy business model, but there's probably no growth left there.
Oh, they've hit market saturation.
Yeah.
You know, and then you get shit like TikTok coming in and eating their lunch. So
yeah, I don't understand TikTok, but that's just me.
But
I suppose it's like NFTs. I'll understand it when it's no longer a thing anymore.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure I get TikTok either. I mean, I think all it is YouTube with a bunch of nice editing tools built into the phone app. Really? Is they designed the whole platform around the idea of smartphones and recording yourself being silly and then putting music over it, right?
Yeah. So,
I mean, it's not a bad idea. I mean, you know, several other people were doing it too. That just happened to be the one that took off. So, of course, it's owned by China, which doesn't help. But Rat says system for dopamine hits that are very... Yeah, that whole... I mean, all social media does that. I mean, hell, Facebook got caught hiring PsyOps guys trying to figure out how to keep people on the platform. So,
yep. The gamification of everything in life is becoming terrible.
Well, you know, like the French and German guy said, you know, life's pretty good without it.
Yeah.
So, Anyways. Next one up, this one's mildly concerning. It's from Reuters. Western Digital says contamination impacting production at Japanese facilities. Western Digital Corp said on Wednesday certain materials at two of its manufacturing units in Japan, operated by joint venture partner Kioxia Holdings Corp., were contaminated and will result in reduced availability of flash storage devices. So prices on SSDs are going to go up. So what they're saying is the material that they actually physically make SSDs from, or flash memory from, the cells, the chips, is contaminated. So it's got something in it it shouldn't. And it's making, it means they're getting a high, abnormally high number of device failures when they go to test chips that are made with these things. And, of course, flash memory's in every fucking thing these days. According to the company's current assessment, there would be a shortage of at least 6.5 exabytes in flash storage availability. 1 exabyte is approximately 1 billion gigabytes. Western Digital is currently working closely with Kioxia to implement necessary measures that will restore the facilities to normal operational status as quickly as possible. Kioxia, one of the biggest producers of globally of flash memory and of solid-state storage, is a key supplier to Western Digital. The two companies were in merger talks last year, but they remain in a standstill. So, Rats is asking, is this like when Detroit Ford GM plant switched off Flint River as a water source months before the public realized there was contamination? I don't know, because they didn't say what the contamination was or what material it was in. So it's hard to know if this is going to be something more than that. But expect hard drive, well, storage prices to continue to be stupid. If anything,
like
they may go
prices?
Up. Say what?
Just like chip prices?
Just like everything.
Just like graphics card prices? Jesus. And you add fucking rampant inflation into that.
Yep, welcome to the rice fields, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I can get worse blackpilled if you want.
I mean, that's up to you if you want to go there. We're at 42 minutes. I've got one story left, and then the dojos, so... If you want to go down that rabbit hole, we can go down that rabbit hole.
No, because it's fucking terrible, and it's bad.
We kind of made it through those stories a little quicker than I thought we would. Of course, we were on the first story for half an hour, but I guess I should know better than to bring up car issues if I wanted to get through them quickly, right? It's all good.
I mean,
it's all good. It's all good.
The car thing was interesting, man.
I thought so. That's why I had it.
Yeah.
So, but, and the idea that, I mean, because I wasn't quite certain where they were going with it. Was it repairability? Was it just, you know, distractions while driving? And when I first skimmed it, because, or when I first saw the headline, I should say, when I skimmed it, obviously it's like, okay, yeah, we want to talk about this, but... You know, I was kind of hoping for something on the whole, you know, cars that don't have all the bling bling in them, people don't wreck as often. But that obviously wasn't what that story was.
No, well, people find their own distractions when driving, man.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, cell phones.
And how many of the extra chips are superfluous? I've got a faulty brake sensor. I'm not going to replace it because it's $300. But the brakes are fine. I still get my brakes checked every time I get my oil changed. And then have the brake pads replaced regularly. And they check the brakes then. No brake problem, but the sensor isn't worth fixing.
And you want to get rid of that annoying dash light?
It'll burn out eventually.
I would tell you how to do it simply. Just get a bit of black tape and stick it over.
It's like what'd you do? Well... Or what was it's a Red Dwarf joke. It's like go from yellow alert to red alert. Are you sure, sir? It means changing the bulb.
Yes. No, I had the same problem, Madman. I had a sensor go wrong, and nothing a bit of compressed air didn't fix.
And there's a completely other sensor that will also tell me that my brakes stopped working. But I don't need that one to tell me why my brakes stopped working, because they've stopped fucking working. You notice that.
Yeah, you will notice it as you career into the car in front of you.
Yeah.
It's like, this feels like brake fade, but worse. Where's the emergency brake at again on this car?
That is kind of one of those sensors that makes you wonder. It's like, your brakes have failed. Gee, thanks for telling me.
Man, when I first started actual racing on the track, I was new to it, so I didn't really know that much. And I didn't know after a while. Like, I knew about brake fade and stuff like that, but after about 10 laps, you really start getting some brake fade. And generally, you just give the brakes a little touch before you come into that first corner that you're going to fly through. I didn't know that at the time. So as I was coming into a really fast corner, I didn't bother tapping the brakes because I didn't know how bad it. I went and put my foot on the brake pedal, and it just went to the floor. That's a pooping moment right there. Because if you think you can move your left leg really quickly, yeah, when the brakes go to the floor, you move it even quicker to try and pump that back up. But,
I have a Honda Accord, rats.
Oh, I can get brake fade on a Honda Accord.
Oh, you can get brake fade on anything if you try hard enough.
Well, you know, if you're brave enough, anything's
Anyway, do the last story.
You take the Honda through the Rockies. And you neglect to remember, you don't need as much gas on the downhill grade on the other side as you did on the uphill grade to stay at 80. And just don't downshift, just hit the brakes every so often.
Oh, last article is from Torrent Freak. Just laughing at Matt, man. You know, taking a Honda Accord down the Rockies. Like, why am I doing? Why am I hitting the limiter?
Oh, and before someone goes, you brake with your left foot? No, that's just to tap the brake before the corner. Then you heel and brake. You heel and accelerate. So, just before there were any complaints.
Honestly, not taking one of those high-end learn to really drive a race car courses. So I don't know if you're wrong or not. Take your word.
I didn't either. That's how I know I fucked up a lot.
Here's a bit of a hint for you, Morps. In most driving, your left foot is only used for the clutch.
Yeah.
That and to test for brake fade into the corners. That way you don't have to take your foot off the accelerator. But
anyways, all right, last word. Police arrest man for running pirate site leaking to anime, movies, and TV shows. So he's not hosting anything. He's just links. Rocky's downhill engine braking after downshifting is fantastic in a stiff shift.
Yeah. You go from fifth gear to fourth gear instead of hitting your brake and let the engine slow you down. Or cranny slow you down.
Fuck it, throw it in reverse, get that real slow down quick.
That gets you white magic smoke. And I saw this, it wasn't downhill, it was a straightaway from Florida back home. We were doing 80 and there was a bee in the car. Apparently the driver was kind of scared of those. And if you try hard enough, the stick on a column in a Chevy Silverado will go from drive to reverse at 80 miles an hour.
Wow.
Your transmission doesn't like it.
As you leave chunks of it on the road behind you.
My God.
You leave the whole thing and the drive shaft will kind of push it into the asphalt. Your car skips a bit, and you call a tow truck.
Oh, man. In 2020, Japan...
it was amazing. Oh, go ahead, sorry.
Japan passed amendments to copyright law to combat so-called leech sites, platforms that carry no content themselves but provide links to pirated content hosted on external servers. According to local anti-piracy sources, a man has now been arrested for offering links to thousands of movies and TV shows, including content owned by production companies Toei and Toho. In 2012, Japan passed legislation that made it illegal to download unlicensed movies and music from the internet. 8 years later, Japan's parliament passed new copyright amendments that banned the unlicensed downloading of manga, magazines, and academic texts from the internet, in line with previously outlawed media categories. At the same time, it introduced provisions for dealing with so-called leech sites, platforms that index or link to copyrighted content hosted elsewhere. Operating such a site without appropriate licensing is now an arrestable offense. In November 2020, the Kyoto Prefecture Police arrested two men for copyright infringement by operating a linking site and providing access to three adult videos. Last month, the Metropolitan Police Department Ayase Station filed charges against a man who operated a linking site that provided links to a pirate site that offered around 30,000 pieces of unauthorized content, including adult animations. I don't have the dramatic sound on this soundboard. The self-employed 37-year-old is said to have earned the equivalent of around U.S. $4,000 in a recent two-month period. So he was doing good off his ad revenue. Quote, yeah. I thought that the Japanese animation and CG are popular overseas, so I could make money by accessing them. I wanted to make some pocket money, unquote, he reportedly confessed. According to a report from local anti-piracy group CODA, the cyber crime division of the Gunma Prefectural Police Headquarters in the Miyabishi Police Station, I'm saying all these names wrong, I'm sure, have arrested a man on suspicion that he, too, operated a leech-slash-linking site that provided access to infringing content. The platform, which has not been named, reportedly offered links to around 6,000 movies and dramas, including around 2,500 Japanese movies and 3,500 foreign titles. The linked infringing content was uploaded to an overseas online storage site and was available for streaming. Multiple links to illegal uploads were placed for each work so that if one link was removed, another would still work. For the purposes of the case, the two specific works are highlighted as being infringed by the defendant. From local production company Toei, the 2020 movie Inkamuria, English Howling Village, is cited, and from Toho, the 2019 movie Tinky no Ko, English Weathering with You. Again, I'm sure I'm saying those wrong.
Right.
And
right
no, I don't really care.
Right now, Morp's law is losing his shit.
Oh, for saying them wrong?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? If Lore makes it to the show, he is free to properly pronounce all the Japanese names.
Weathering with You is pretty good if anyone hadn't watched it.
Fire it later on.
Yeah, what was the link site? in common with the 37-year-old linking site suspect, it's said that the man in this matter earned money from his platform, specifically via advertising revenue. Under local law, the generation of revenue is not a requirement for criminal prosecution, but may be considered an aggravating factor. Either way, the punishments are potentially severe. Linking site offenses carry a sentence of up to 5 years in prison, a maximum fine of 5 million yen, or about $43,600, or in some cases, both. In addition, Toei and Toho can pursue damage claims through a civil suit. Earlier this year, the formation of the International Anti-Piracy Organization was announced by CODA. The aim of the new coalition is to tackle the illegal online distribution of anime, manga, and similar copyrighted content around the world. Along with dozens of other companies, Toei is expected to be part of the coalition. So, yeah, and they've actually got another article about here about that coalition, specifically targeting manga and I guess anime too, but yeah, I mean that's pretty harsh. I mean, granted it's Japan. I understand their legal system is not exactly forgiving, but just running a linking site will get you arrested over there now. That's pretty crazy. So I guess it just shows how far we've gone with the internet. Whereas, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I still think of doing stupid shit on the internet as being stupid shit that stays on the internet and no one cares.
Nah, they're really angry about shit you do now.
Yeah, really.
Like, it used to be just a little bit of fun, right?
Rat says, "Have you met the Nintendo lawyers?" No, I have not.
No, and there's a reason I didn't fuck around with Nintendo.
Yeah.
You know, there's bears you don't poke. And, yeah. I mean, there's going to be a day when we're going to be nervous about the station. We're going to have the talk.
Well, yeah, we've talked about taking the music streaming side of it down and just doing the shows.
I mean, yeah, we'll see when we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
I wonder if they define how many links it has to be on to be a linking site.
It didn't say, Madman. I don't know.
It didn't say.
Because I know what they're meaning. It's just a site indexing different links to videos. But articles index links to references.
Well, I mean, and, you know, are you going to go after Google? Could you guys do an onion address instead of ClearNet URL? I mean, we could, but I mean, anybody who's ever used it knows it's slow as Christmas.
I mean, once again, that's a conversation down the road, man. I'm not interested in having it right now.
Well, and I'm not sure how useful it would be, honestly, to go straight onion address. I mean, because I still would want to host it somewhere, and that means it's still, in my mind, available on the ClearNet. So it's like, you know, I mean, really? I guess we could throw one on it, but and overlap and warn people about the switch over, what, the five people who still listen to us?
Yeah.
We don't keep stats. I actually have no idea how many listeners we have. We could have five. We could have way more than that. So, I honestly have no idea. And frankly, don't care. Honestly, I do not care.
I'm the same.
I had more listeners, it'd be cool if they popped into the IRC and, you know, interacted while we were doing the show, because that's fun. But other than that, I actually don't care how many people listen. As long as it's not, you know, people at work doing the social media stuff, because I don't want to have to explain anything. Rats, you are in pretty often. You're right. So, what's the subreddit count? I don't know. I haven't looked at the subreddit in forever. I do get messages on Reddit every once in a while. People sending me links, but anyways. So what I have for you tonight in Digital Dojo is pretty cool. This may not be for everyone. I would actually be kind of surprised if Madman and RU were interested in this one. But this is a interview on YouTube with the man who wrote the initial operating system for the Amiga. He wrote Amiga DOS. And, you know, this is an old school guy who started out on like a PDP-11 or old school mainframes, right? And early on in the interview, he is talking about early operating system design and, you know, having the computer passing packets between the chips back and forth and you know, how people would never put weights into their programs. And, I saw that too, that when I threw the YouTube link in there, it tried to pop it up in the IRC. I closed that because that was going to be in the way and I didn't want it to autoplay. But, you know, he talks about, you know, he spends 20 minutes giving his background and it's like, it's really clear that this guy knows what he's on about and he's been just doing it forever. Right. And, you know, then he spends a good hour talking about, you know, actually writing the operating system for the Amiga, getting it going. And even if you don't use the Amiga, right, it's still fascinating listening to this guy talk because of just the old school design stuff he's talking about and the low level interaction of the computer. And, you know, his wife is talking about properly booting a PDP-11 by setting the switches for memory addresses and then, you know, firing that and then setting the switches for the next loader, firing that, then actually running your code by setting another address. I mean, you could argue relevance today, but I think it's interesting. So I would definitely recommend watch. It is an hour and a half long, so just a warning. But, it's fascinating for that old school, how they were doing this back in the day before you had, you know, layers and layers of... And that's one of the reasons I'm so fascinated by these old machines, right? Of course, I used them when I was a kid, but I didn't understand what was going on with them, really. I just, you know, could play Pitfall, right? Or Pac-Man, or Jungle Hunt, which I was trying to remember what the name of that game was, and so I'm sitting there Googling earlier, Commodore game where you swing on the vines, right? And I finally found it, and it was somebody ranting about what a fucking terrible game it was, and I'm like, I loved that game. I was like five, but I loved that game. But, you know, with those old 8 and 16-bit machines, you didn't have gigabytes of RAM and gigabytes of storage, terabytes of storage these days. You know, networking was basically not a thing. Yeah, you'd have a serial link and you might have a modem, but, you know, you weren't on the internet all the time. You didn't have networks of machines. And, you know, you didn't have, you know, a BIOS layer to present, you know, to load an operating system into memory. And then the operating system had a layer for talking to the hardware for device drivers and an interface on top of that. And, you know, now you got DirectX and Windows and about, you know, five or six layers between you and the hardware. Right. And it's, you know, so it's like, you know, in a modern machine, you know, especially something like a cell phone, you want to poke, you know, memory values on the chip, there's no way to do it. You can't, I mean, yeah, I guess you can get in there with the debugger and find the right tooling to do it, but there's not, you know, you're not interacting with the hardware. You know, you're talking to an API. That's talking to a driver. That's eventually getting translated down to the hardware through a few layers. But, you know, talking to these, you know, you look at these guys, like the old Commodore machines, the old Apple machines, they're interfacing directly with the chips. They're making these, I mean, you look at the, I mean, hell, even the old Nintendo, right? You look at what the thing was, and you compare it to a modern system, and you're thinking, how in the hell did they write these games that, you know, the entire library of NES ROMs would fit today on, you know, an SD card? Like, nothing. So, you know, I like listening, learning about some of these old machines just because a lot of what's going on in these old machines is still going on in the modern ones. You just don't see it because you've got layers of operating system and other stuff on top of it. So, have you seen the original Tomb Raider running natively on the Game Boy Advance? Yes, I did see that video. Somebody's a mad person for translating that in over to the Game Boy. Anyways, but even assembly isn't really, I mean, you know, it's kind of controlling the hardware, but, you know, it's translated into machine code. It's not machine, anyways. I can rant about that for hours, but it's a good interview. Old school tech. That's, of course, all I've got for tonight. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site and subreddit in the IRC tonight. Because the window is resized. CyberLard, Her Rats, Madman, and myself. Madman, closing thoughts.
This was when you're talking about how much changed on what all the operating system does during boot up. I don't remember whether it was you or one of the other nerdy friends I have was telling me how they set Solitaire as the operating system on a computer once, and for a while it would boot.
There are a whole collection of things called boot sector games. So on a modern disk, you have a sector of the disk that's called the boot sector that is a known address. I forget actually what it is off the top of my head. You'd think it's the first sector. It's not. The first sector is a bunch of fat and disk information. But the boot sector is where your boot loader goes. If you ever installed Linux and had to install Grub, Grub goes in the boot sector. You know, Windows has one too, and they tend to replace any, you know, Windows tends to replace anything else on the system with its own because, you know, Microsoft thinks you shouldn't have other operating systems on the computer. But there is a whole collection of boot sector games. 8-Bit Guy actually did a video on it. But yeah, you could boot Tetris as a game. And I'm sure there were others, and I bet there was one called Solitaire. You might also be thinking somebody just set Solitaire as the program manager in Windows 3.1, because that'll work too. But not nearly as much fun as the idea of a boot sector game. Actually,
Galactic Pinball.
Actually, that reminds me of something funny too. I found this pack of DOS games. I think we even linked it for a dojo. And I was going through all the zips, and I kept noticing Free Cell was in all of them. And it's like, why the hell is FreeCell in all these DOS and Windows 3.1 games? Well, it was because they had an entire Windows 3.1 installation that had been stripped down, but just enough Windows 3.1 to run the game that was in the collection, right? So the idea was for DOSBox, you would just, you know, mount that, you know, mount the folder as a drive, and it had everything it needed to run, including a minimal Windows install that they had stripped it out. And for some reason, FreeCell was in all of them, and it took me forever to figure that out because I wasn't used to seeing Windows stripped down to just a handful of files like that. So, I mean, it works, but anyways, that's all I got. Did we do closing thoughts?
Are you
closing thoughts?
I didn't have one this week. That made it easy, didn't it?
Yeah, it does make it easy. So let's play sound effects.
Attention, attention. There is no cause for alarm. Grasp the nearest oxygen mask and put it over your nose and mouth immediately. There is no cause for alarm. Breathe normally. Use the strap on your mask to keep it in place. There is no cause for alarm.
Nose down and call the night.
I'll pass it out.